Our justice system in America is broken. Too often, men are condemned to death for crimes they did not commit. Kevin Cooper sits on death row in California for crimes he may be innocent of. The new book, Scapegoat, The Chino Hills Murders and the Framing of Kevin Cooper by author J. Patrick O'Connor asks the question, did the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department frame Kevin Cooper? This riveting new book exposes our broken justice system and the sad reality that some men in America have been and will be executed for crimes they did not commit. Get your copy of Scapegoat, The Chino Hills Murders and the Framing of Kevin Cooper by author J. Patrick O'Connor, available at bookstores everywhere and Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksamillion.com.
Welcome to Authors First on the Artists First World Radio Network, artistsfirst.com. Tony K in the studio. Questions or comments during the broadcast can be directed to dj@artistsfirst.com. I'd like to thank all of our listeners worldwide for supporting the arts on Artists First Radio and remind them that, hey, you know, all of the broadcasts are available free on demand in MP3 format, so be sure to share the information with Twitter, Facebook, and all of your social network sites. This hour, it's our privilege to introduce author Tania Ortiz, that's TannIaOrtiz. She's a native Puerto Rican. She's an author, photographer, songwriter, and has been living in Germany since, I believe, 2004. She's written a fascinating book. She loves to talk about her journey and her experience with Jesus Christ, her Savior. So if you're a Christian and you love good Christian material and books, you're going to enjoy her book. She's the author of My Walk with Jesus, The Window to My Soul, My Walk with Jesus, published by Tate Publishing. And so we're very excited to bring on our guest, very creative artist, and we're so grateful that she's taking time to be with us this hour. Let's give a warm welcome to our guest. How do you do, Tania?
Hello. Good evening. First of all, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to allow me to talk to your audience about my books, my poetry, and my songwriting and my photography.
We're so fortunate at Artists First to have a plethora of creative talent from all over the world that support the arts. And just looking at the website, you can see we've had very famous personalities and well-accomplished artists, musicians, performers, entertainers, as well as the novice coming on board. So it's a great venue. Thank you for joining us. What led you from Puerto Rico to Germany? Is that a military or a relationship or just the locale?
Actually, I'm married to a native German. We met in Nashville, Tennessee. And he always told me since we met that when the opportunity was available, he would like to go back home. So we've been living here actually since July 2004. 4th of July, we moved to
Wow.
Germany.
Wow, how exciting. Germany's a wonderful. As a matter of fact, I lived there for a year, and I traveled all over the country and several other countries in Europe, and back in the 70s. It was a little different then. But nonetheless, I enjoyed the ambiance and the microbreweries. They were everywhere.
Yes.
And of course, that was new. It was not even popular in the United States at that time. But you could really enjoy a community, their flavor, their style, the dance, the beer, the food, and really get a grasp of the culture of Germany. And now you've lived there since
2004.
So we're looking at 8 years. How's the German coming along?
Actually, it has been quite an adventure. All my friends always ask me about how is it to learn German. It is an extremely difficult language to learn. However, the German literature is so exquisite that once you really master the language, then you could read the original books in German, and they are just simply amazing. It's a very guttural language. For example, for you to say I in English, that's ich. And this ich sound takes months to master. Luckily, my husband has helped me to master that sound before we moved here, but it's really very challenging. So if you want to say to somebody in German that you love, then you will say ich liebe dich.
Now, did you attend kindergarten, or how did you begin that lingual journey?
My bilingual journey. Well, all Puerto Ricans, we are American citizens. And in Puerto Rico, both languages are English and Spanish. So you actually start learning English since kindergarten, all the way up till you finish the university.
Wow. Hey, that helps a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, but at the same time, you need to have the attitude to learn it. When I was in school, I never thought or dreamed that I would be living in the United States. So for me, it was just another class. And of course, then my last year of university, my first husband joined the military. And I found me trying to learn in 1 year what I didn't learn in 13. And it was quite challenging. But I managed to live for almost 20 years in the United States. And then that's why the first book was written in English and not my native language, Spanish.
Tinia, you have so many creative interests, so many interesting ways of looking at the world and our role in the world. Do you find yourself divided unequally in those areas?
There's no such a thing as equally. I think that it's a matter of knowing how to organize your days based on priorities. I tend to organize myself by weeks, not by days, because sometimes I don't even make to-do list anymore, because half of the time what I write in the list is not what I do. So I tend to put goals so that I could say, today I will work in this particular project, and then tomorrow I will work on the other one, because you cannot also forget your house. I'm still a wife and a mother. I had to clean my house like every housewife. I had to go buy groceries. I had to cook dinner, which I love to cook and bake, in addition to my projects.
So yeah, exactly.
It's challenging so life to juggle those hats.
Right. Life is happening all around you. And in those moments, you have to capture that creative element, whether it be a photograph or something you're writing or a song that may come to you.
That is something very hard to explain. For example, when I write poetry, anything could inspire the poem. In my dining room, when my youngest son was little, right now he's 15, he drew a rainbow with this particular colors, you know? And one day during breakfast, I'm looking at this beautiful picture of the rainbow, and that actually inspired a poem right there. So I just sat in my dining room and wrote my poem. I have the habit of always keeping a piece of paper or a pen always nearby, because you never know when inspiration might strike. Pictures are different. Sometimes I'm looking for a particular subject or theme to photograph. Sometimes I just go on a hike with my husband or by myself. Something catch my attention, and then I just try to capture that moment with a camera.
And with songwriting, is that an emotional thing for you? Where does music fit in?
Music. Okay. That's really, it's inherited. My mother's father, my grandpa, he's been dead for a couple of years, but he was himself a famous trumpet player. composer from Puerto Rico. His name was Antonio Lopez Rodriguez. And so it really comes from my mother's side of the family. When we were little, I also took guitar lessons, basic guitar. And at the school, we always did every year one or two shows. And we sang on the public square. This is very typical from Puerto Rico during carnival or special events. And so I was always really on stage. Now, when I hit the adolescent years, you know that we all have rebellious stages. So some people reveal maybe using drugs or doing alcohol. I pour all my energy into writing. That's really what I kept my sanity. So sometimes I wrote on purpose a song that I start playing my guitar. Oh, look at this combination of chords. Sounds very nice. And then that will inspire the song. In other occasions, I wrote a poem, and then the poem started singing to me. He said, hello, give me some rhythm. I'm here. And then I will get the guitar and try to play the chords, trying to figure it out. If that didn't work out, then I will sing the song a cappella and save it. So I have a recording of the song, so I could not forget the song. And that's how I approach songwriting. I have my youngest brother, he's a professional musician, and he has done a couple of my music arrangements for me, and he's extremely, extremely talented. I am one of the most proud sisters to have such a wonderful brother.
Absolutely. You know, I love to talk to authors such as yourself with a creative background, your grandfather, your family. You've even taken trips back to Puerto Rico to perform with the band.
Not really. All this happened when I was a child.
Oh, before you left Puerto Rico.
I left Puerto Rico December 1988.
Aha. Uh-huh.
When I graduated from the University of Mayagüez, I finished a bachelor degree on secretarial science. Before that, I studied in Ponce. And in Ponce was really when I started more seriously my poetry career. My Spanish professor, Rosarito, she saw my talent, and she really mentored me for the 5 years that I studied there. And she helped me to find my voice. At the first poems that I published in Argentina, I have her to thank her for that because she knew about the editorial, and she told me about it, and I got an invitation from them, and that's what I was able to publish a couple years with the Editor Interamericano in Argentina. That was my first international exposure, and it was an awesome experience.
Well, you know, it's so interesting and inspires the creative juices when an artist such as yourself are able to cross multiple cultures. Now, there are obviously Argentinian culture, perhaps a little more similar to Spanish Puerto Rican culture. Is that right?
Not really.
No, I'm all wet.
We are more close to Cuba and Dominican Republic. We share more the same type of music, like salsa and merengue. Argentina is more tango.
There you go.
And we are all Hispanic, but we all have our own ketchup. How to put it? You will never call a barbecue sauce ketchup. They are both sauces, but they are not ketchup. They are not barbecue, if you see what I mean.
I do. And so regions of island peoples do have their own flavor, approach to the music, right?
Yeah, that is correct.
And the choices of instruments and the way that sound is projected. You bring all that to the table. Do you find yourself going back to it? Back to that flavor, that style of music?
Well, as you grow as a person, you also grow in your talents, and life teaches you lessons that you use to become better. I don't believe in always being the same. You have to evolve, because if you don't grow, then you're stuck. I hate this inertia status. I'm always on the move. I am very curious. I'm always very eager to learn something new, to get my fingers everywhere. And I also like to do crafts and to sew. And I love sewing. And now I'm doing bags for all my family and friends. And I'm really enjoying it because there's a point where I need to empty my mind. I have so many ideas in my mind that sometimes I have to tell them, hey, I need silence. So for me to organize my thoughts, then I need to do craft. I need to work with my hands. It could be painting. It could be sewing. It could be baking. But sometimes I really need to work with my hands so I could let all this energy flow, empty my mind, and then I could keep writing. So that's how I prevent writer's block. I have never suffered from writer's block. Like other of my friends, I say, how do you deal with that? I say, what is that?
Wow. And you're right. Your mind is racing all of the time. Now, with these purses, the things that you're creating, are you that's colors and textures. And,
you know. Yes.
And really, you're handling material now. That's a very creative process.
Yeah, it's a way, it's very therapeutical for me. Some people like to jog. I like to work with my hands.
Do you think there's a unifying sense of Tania Ortez, your style? Does all of this transfer into the way you wear your hair and your jewelry and your clothes? Come on, I see it. I think I have it right.
I'm actually a very simple person. I usually wear a ponytail. I'm on the rush. However, if the occasion calls for elegance, then I will wear my makeup, go to the beauty salon, fix my hair, wear a very nice dress, most of the time one that I sew myself, and then go for elegance. But if it's just simply comfort, jeans, tennis shoes, sweater, and my baseball hat. Typical America.
I love the way you introduced yourself at the very beginning of the broadcast as a mother, a wife, that you are cooking and taking care of a home and very much a giving, Christ-centered, loving person. You enjoy allowing God to work through you to bless others.
That is correct.
And that's a gift. That's not something everyone can do comfortably. But you enjoy it, you love it, and you've written a book really that's a testament to that faith. Does that go back to your childhood? Did you grow up with God in your life, or did you rediscover him later?
Yes. Our families, we are Catholics. And we always went to Mass. Actually, I learned to pray the rosary with my grandmother. That's my mother's mom. And then there was a phase of my life, I think that we all go through this, that we like to wander in the wilderness, no? We like to a little bit dabble with what is the prohibit, you know? That somebody said, don't eat that apple, and that apple suddenly start looking so good that you have to buy it, no? Just one of these, no? So there was a phase that I actually went, I was looking for something more. So I went through different churches. I studied almost for 1 year with Jehovah Witnesses, excuse me. And I must say, I learned a lot about the Bible. I mean, from them. I also visited Methodist churches, Seven Days, Mormons. I mean, I really did my whole round. Everywhere, looking for something to compare. I was just wanted to see, do I feel the same on all these churches? Or is there something about my faith that I miss from them? And even though I have a good exploring experience, I got to the conclusion that I was born Catholic, I was raised Catholic, and I will die Catholic. It helped me to appreciate more my faith. But I had to do it.
Yes.
To test, why do I believe this? And then when you go shopping around, then you realize that everything you've been looking for, you already had it. So you don't have to look any further.
It's the pilgrimage to the Holy Land. It's the walk of St. James through Spain. Of course, it's a journey, a process of struggling with who we are in the world and what purpose does God have for me as an individual, and will I be fulfilling that purpose in my life? That's something that's not easily attained. I don't think it's something that you say, I've arrived. You know, it's something that's always in the mode of opportunity and evolvement of faith.
That is correct. Well, you know what they say, it's arriving, it's the journey that makes you grow.
That's right. And this process, this journey of looking at your own faith, your background, looking at other religions and so forth, that was a big blessing for you, ultimately, and reaffirming your faith. Now, was it through that process that you decided to write the book, The Window
Actually,
to My
no,
Soul?
That came... That's a different story, but since we're talking about asking and seeking, if I may,
yes.
I would like to read you a poem from my book, The Window to My Soul, My Walk with Jesus, and that is actually the title, Asking and Seeking. Lord, give me wisdom and understanding to accept gratefully the blessings and trials of my life. Forgive me when in my human weakness I speak, think, or nurture evil feelings in my heart. Clean my mind, my heart, open my eyes and my ears, so I could understand the message to this sinner seeking peace and wisdom for her overall life to serve you.
Amen.
Amen.
Very much a prayer.
Yes. Many people actually have told me that my poems actually read like psalms, because a psalm is really a prayer that you can sing.
Ah, yes.
And some of mine you could do both. No, actually, the book was born out of and please don't laugh when I tell you, of a silent spiritual retreat. I'm a kind of person that actually talk even when I'm asleep. So I, needless to say, this weekend was extremely challenging for me when I was only allowed to speak during dinner. The rest of the day you were supposed to be quiet, searching the scriptures, enjoying nature. This retreat house was located near a lake, and it has a gorgeous view, and it was in the middle of nature that you really found peace even by listening to the birds singing. It was wonderful. That was actually my husband's Mother's Day gift that year in 2003. That's what I wish, and he gave it to me, and that was one of the best Mother's Day gifts he has given me. During this retreat, during dinner, I talked to one of the other ladies there, and so she knew that I wrote poetry, so she said, could you read one of your poems to me? And I said, sure. So I read one of my meditations to her, and she said, wow, you should publish that. I said, oh, man, you don't know what you're saying. Now I'm going to have that idea in my mind, and that will not go away. Next day, no, it get better. Next day, I told my spiritual director at the retreat house, every person get assigned a spiritual director, no? So she gave me something to study, and I read to her in a poem. And at the beginning, she was a little bit upset, and she said, I asked you to do meditations, and you're writing me a poem, reading me a poem. I said, this is how I write. So after she understood, so I read the poem to her, and she was really very impressed. And she also said the same. You should publish this. And I said, oh, man, now there are two. I said, Lord, are you trying to tell me something? The retreat is over. The week after, I meet with my regular spiritual director. Back then was Father Bill. And I said, Father Bill, so he asked me, how was the retreat? I said, oh, it was wonderful. I came home totally recharged, full of energy, full of love and understanding for my family. And then I mentioned to him what happened during the retreat. And he also said, that is a wonderful idea. You should do it. So at that point, I look up to the sky and I say, okay, Lord, I get it. I got your message. You want me to publish now? Help me to find the publisher. So the whole process of organizing and choosing the poems and meditations for the book took about a year. It was very difficult because this poem, as you just heard, they are very personal. And everything I do with a lot of passion. And when I pour my heart and soul and a piece of paper, means for a poem or for a song or for a devotion. It's really, it's raw. It's, I give it 100% of me and then some. And it was difficult to choose them because each one of them triggered a memory. And some memories were happy, but others were very sad. So sometimes in the process of choosing the poems, I had to take a break to cry and to go away and do something else, sort of like to compose myself again and then go back to it. So that took about a whole year, and then I started looking for the publisher, and that's pretty much what the poem came about.
Now, many of the poems you selected for the book were actually decades old.
Not really. These poems were, okay, when I was started my spiritual direction study with Father Bill, every time we met, he assigned to me scriptures. And in about our third meeting, he said to me, I want you to read the book of Job. I kick and scream and hold. I say, you out of your mind. Who can read Job? That book is super sad and it's difficult. There's no way I'm going to read that book. Can you give me the Psalms? They're easier. So I hold up for a good 5 minutes. And he just looked at me. And when I was done kicking, he said, we see next week, first chapter, Book of Hope. Okay. And actually, reading the Book of Hope was a really big blessing for me, not only because the book, actually this is only a half of the Book of Hope, the other half I'm still working with it, but because it helped me to see suffering not through my eyes, but through the eyes of somebody else, and to identify myself. The main thing that Father Bill always said to me, he said, whenever you read a scripture or you write something, try to see Christ in it as a human, not as the Son of God. Try to seek the humanity of Christ and apply these scriptures to your life in relationship to Christ. Once you approach the Book of Hope, from that point of view, you get a whole different image. It's something completely different because then it's no longer about you. It's about somebody else. And it's very, it's a wonderful experience.
It was life-changing for you.
Yes,
I mean, first of all, for you to share your writing in a public way and then to be accepted and encouraged to publish the material multiple times, you know, that's tough. Like you said, these were intimate details of emotions and feelings that you'd never intended to be shared elsewhere. And now you are finding yourself spending a year and a half going through all of your materials to create this book. Were there any themes or topics, or how did you ultimately organize the material?
Well, yes, actually the book is divided in 4 sections. As I was growing in my knowledge and working with Father Bill, then I organized, and the first one I called it A New Beginning. These are poems and meditations that grew out of my first baby steps. Then Father Bill assigned the Book of Job, which I wrote and read and, I mean, went over. Then he also gave me other scriptures from, he also gave me a pamphlet, little pamphlet excerpts from books and from mysticals. And for me to study, like John of the Cross, Catherine from Genoa, and I needed to read their writings and also meditate over them. And that also inspired other poems. And sometimes I wrote letters to Jesus for things that were happening in my life. That section I call it Reflections While Walking with God and Jesus. And the other ones I titled it Through the Darkness. Because that's when you really have to confront this dark night of the soul and find a way to come out of it. But going back to Job, I would like to read another poem, which this is Job angry. This is not Job feeling pity for himself. This poem comes from Job chapter 13, verses 1 through 6, when people are trying to give an advice, and I could just picture Job very fed up, okay? And I have a great imagination. So this poem is called Who is the Wiser? This is a little bit more strong in tone. Who is the wiser among us? We all consider ourselves wise. And because of my misery, you think you're wiser than me? How dare you come and rebuke me and tell me stories and give me advice when you are sinning or spit or pride? How dare you come and proclaim yourself righteous and fit to speak on behalf of the wisdom of God? But let me tell you a thing or two. I am wise too. I am strong too. Am I also in need of hearing and wish to rebuke one or two? Go and first clean the log in your eyes so you could see and help me to remove the speck of dust inside my eye. You know nothing, I don't. So why don't you take a hike and once for the long leave me alone? I prefer your silence over your counsel. I prefer your silence over your falsehood. I prefer your silence over the nonsense and empty shallow words you might want to say. I prefer your silence over your judgment, since human judgment is a joke to God, who sees it all, who knows it all, who judge wisely and is impartial according to our deeds. Thank you and no thank you for your wisdom. I think I will contemplate the picture with my eyes and invite God to come along with me.
Oh, well, I didn't expect that. But
really, in this chapter, Job is really fed up. Everybody's telling him, it's your fault, you have sinned, and God is punishing you. I mean, there's a point that you have to really get out of your chest. You know? So I really picture myself, Hope, telling these people pretty much where to go. You know? And that inspired the meditation.
Yes. How long does it take you to work or struggle with a piece of art like you've just read there? Do these things flow easily, or do you find that sometimes there's a struggle in fitting in the right word?
No, they just flow. I mean, sometimes I could be asleep. Sometimes my husband says, "Why are you rushing out of bed?" Because I come to my office, I got a thought and an idea in my mind. I have to rush out of bed and write it down because I know that in the morning I will forget what I just thought.
Oh,
so
yes.
I always keep pencil and pen very handy because really anything could have, anything can inspire. When I'm inspired, I could sit and write three or four at the same time. But I don't force it. Sometimes writers said, I sit in front of my computer and wait for words to come for me to write. If I do that, my goodness, my house will never get clean. We would not eat dinner here because I was too busy sitting in front of my computer. So I wait for inspiration to come to me, regardless where I am. I always keep pencil and paper on my purse. I mean, really, it could. About a month ago, I was currently working with a research project from the Second War.
And you were driving 100 miles an hour on the Autobahn.
No, I was not. I was in the parking lot waiting for my son to come out of port. And I only have with me, and this is really funny, the bulletin of the church. Nothing else. And my pen. And I said, well, this paper will have to do. Luckily, my pen was blue, so you could still read over the bulletin of the church a poem. And that actually inspired a poem in German about the war, and just telling a story from the eyes of a child. And that poem actually has given the book the title, and that poem will not be published until the book published, because it's an introduction, it's part of the book. Just like that, I was just sitting there enjoying nature, and suddenly I got this inspiration on my hand, look for a paper and a pen, juggle it down immediately, and of course then I came home because I'm still learning German to try to edit it, and then I gave it to Father Baltas, who is my spiritual director here in German, and then he corrected it for me, and I said, well, maybe you could say this and this way. I said, okay, good. So now it's already edited, ready for my book.
Tania, did you include any poems about your love interest, your husband?
Not in these books. These books are written for God, not for him. To him, I have written songs, several songs, and poems. Actually, when we were dating, I wrote him a very long poem titled No Sabes Cuánto Te Amo, You Don't Know How Much I Love You. And in this poem, I'm telling him what I feel for him. And he liked this poem so much that he actually has it hanging on his wall, on the wall of his office.
And you won't be publishing it?
That one, no. That one is too personal. You need to learn this. You could write everything you want to empty your mind, but not everything that you write is for the public eye. Sometimes it's just for yourself.
Well, that's right. And those who are in the public eye are most attuned to that reality.
That is correct.
And so you in a sense also enjoy your privacy.
Yes.
And your
very
family.
Much.
And so much of what you do is intended for their edification and benefit more than worldwide acclaim and notoriety.
That is correct.
Well, what an exciting time for you and your husband and family. Do you think that you'll return to the music stage in Germany?
Well, actually, I've been taking private singing classes for about 5 years and training in classical music. And I have sung here in my church here in Killian, St. Killian Church in La Mata. I'm currently with a very good chorus in the city of Iserlohn. I have not been able to sing solos there, but earning my starts. And every time, 2-3 times a year, my teacher does little concerts for us to lose our nervousness when you are on stage, no? And been able to give us an opportunity to perform. And I have done that. This year, I had the pleasure, because for me, it was really a lot of fun. I do have a little bit of theater background. And we celebrate Carnival here. So this was the Women's Catholic of my church. That's the Catholic Women Association, I apologize, here in La Mata. And I sang Cabaret from Liza Minnelli. But I did it in a funny way, because, you know, the original song is very sexy. But they said to do it not like that. I said, no problem. The priest will be there. And, I mean, there is a point. I could not go to communion if the priest seen me in all this sexy attire. I could not go to communion. It's not possible. So what I did, I wore this tie, a skin color, and a very bright green socks. I have a house dress, bright orange with butterflies and flowers in very, very bright colors. And then I put a bathrobe over it. I have curls on my hair. And then I pretended that I was a cleaning lady. So I sang this song as if I was a cleaning lady. Aww. And it was really hilarious. Everybody laughed so hard that they said, please, for next year, prepare two songs, please. So I think that it's always nice when people encourage you to sing again.
Yeah, isn't it just wonderful to have a community, the church, the leadership, everyone acknowledging and recognizing that you have a talent, a gift to share, to raise the spirit and help people focus on the meaning of their life and their communion with God. What a wonderful treasure you are. Thank you, Tania Ortiz, for being our guest on Authors First. Tony Kay in the studio, welcoming listeners from every nation on earth. Thank you for tuning in and being our guest. We invite you to follow the link we've provided on our homepage for author, songwriter, and photographer, Tania Ortiz. You'll see we've listed timewithtania.tripod.com. Be sure to capture the link and share it with everyone you know. You won't be disappointed. She's a lovely, lovely Christian and has made a wonderful contribution artistically with her book and with her music and her photography. So have fun, audience, sharing the interview on Facebook, Twitter, and your social network sites. Thanks a lot for being our guest, Tania, and for taking time out. There's a few hours differential between where we're located here in Northeast Ohio and where you're at in Germany. So thank you for taking the time to be with us. Do you believe that you're going to have another book coming forth anytime soon?
Actually, I am currently working on a research project of the Second War here in Germany. I have interviewed 13 Germans. Those interviews were conducted in German. I've been working with that for 4 years, and I am hoping in 3 years have the book published. It will publish first in German, because this is the language that the interview has been conducted, and I promise a copy of the book to each one of the persons that share their story with me. And if I publish it in English, they will not be able to understand it.
Now, you're interested in what aspect? Their background, their lives, or the impact the war had on them and their family? What's your approach?
All of the above.
Yeah, so it's going to be a really powerful, moving story of their lives.
Yes, it will. It had taken me so long because when I started doing this project, my German was very limited. Now, of course, it's much better, and I could work with it quicker. I had two persons that have assisted me with the editing of my transcripts, and that has been extremely helpful. But now I am on the point that almost everything has been edited and currently doing the follow-up interviews. And I really hope and pray to God that this autumn I could start sitting and writing the book. I'm currently taking private German classes, and I have a wonderful tutor with a lot of patience. And she's really walking with me this path of learning to write in German.
Well, you know, you're covering a big, powerful topic for those who were involved with World War II, correct?
That is correct. It's very difficult because I have a variety of interview people that were children during the war, people that were adolescents during the war, that they needed to become soldiers. When I think of a 16-year-old to be a soldier, I look at my son who is 15, and he still looked to me like a child. And they have to grow up too fast. And those stories are very moving. And there are others that they were adults. So some stories really have parts that are very romantic and very funny, really funny. And then there comes the soldier stories, usually tends to be a little bit more sad because they share with me their experience in the war, on the front, friends that they lost. I mean, one of the people that I interview, his best friend died on his back because they were coming back from Stalingrad. The Germans are losing, and they are in the retreat, and they're in the forest. So his best friend get injured in the leg. He carry him on his back. They had to leave the forest to go to an open field. From above come a Russian airplane and start shooting down to them. And his friend also got a bullet, so his friend saved his life. And this gentleman is today 90, and he's still alive because his friend protected him when he was trying to save his friend's life. And it was extremely difficult for him to go to the parents of his best friend and tell him that he didn't make it, that he died. And they couldn't bury him. They had to leave him there on the field waiting until everything was quiet so they could collect the bodies.
And that one story could be a book all by itself. You know, it's the process of combing through and understanding and then condensing and still doing justice to the individuals involved and the dynamics of that experience, right? You want to capture it all, but then you have others that you need to include.
That is great. So it will be a very interesting book. I'm moving because it's a way to expose the pain of the German people from this war. And even though I know that this war had this very bad stain because what happened to the Jews, but these Jews were also Germans. These are people that were living in Germany from generation to generation. They fought on the First War under the Prussian Empire, and they were willing to fight again on the Second War. But that's when, of course, unfortunately, Hitler got all his craziness, no? And that was not possible. I actually visited one concentration camp, Bergen, Belsen, where Anne Frank died, and some of her family. And I read her book before we went there. And when I walked this place, it was an incredible experience.
Eerie. You feel the presence of what was still lingering.
Yeah, it's not only that, you know, you get a better understanding of what is written in the book. It's not the same thing that you read, okay, they walk from the train station to the entrance of the camp and then from the camp to the barracks, that you walk in that entrance. That entrance is a couple of miles long, not an easy walk. And then you get to walk on this place, and when you go to the museum and you see these pictures, you ask yourself, is this really possible? How could this happen? But also people that tried to help to prevent that also suffer because they also ended on concentration camps. If you saw the movie Operation Valkyrie, this is a coup d'etat against Hitler. Those people, I mean, really, many people risk their life trying to prevent it. And when many people realized what's going on, it was too late. Nothing could be done. So it's a very sad story. And very, very sad.
And yet lessons that we can never forget.
Of course.
As human beings, as a society, that we can be led down a panacea, a road that ultimately leads to desire and destruction. So I'm glad that you're going to capture these stories, and I'm very excited about all of the artistic elements that you'll incorporate to add vision and clarity and morality to the theme. It's a very exciting project. And, you know, I think the general public sometimes forget how an author will sacrifice and research, and this is a big thing, and you're going to spend several years accumulating information and then digesting it and determining how to write and frame the story. It's a big commitment of time and resources.
Actually, I consider a big responsibility. I think that we people that have been given the gift of the word, we have to be responsible with how we use it. Sometimes we use it and abuse it, but we have to be very careful in what we write because that could affect other person in a positive or in a negative way. So we always have to look what is the message between the lines to be sure that we convey the right message.
Do you find that being multilingual, that adds an element of interest to your material because you can think and logic in German or Spanish or English?
Yes, actually it is because you're working with different parts of your brain. So your brain is not lazy. Your brain is always constantly moving. And sometimes now that I'm more getting into the German language, when I write my book reviews in English, my editor sometimes comments, yeah, I could see that German grammar is slowly creeping in because the verb is changed. And really, German is extremely interesting. And sometimes you have to keep yourself alert to be sure that you're using the correct grammar to the language that you write. So you don't get your wires confused or crossed. You don't get crosswire in your brain. You learn a lot when you're trying to. And you see, when you live in different places, as you travel the world, you always catch, you adapt what is good from each culture, and you reject what is negative. And that helps you to grow, and you become a better person.
Tania Ortiz, thank you for being our guest on Authors First. Tony Kaye in the studio. It's been my privilege to introduce you to our worldwide audience. Listeners, get out there, visit the website we've placed on our homepage, timewithtania.tripod.com. Just follow the link. You won't be disappointed. Lots of great material there. And, of course, purchase the book available at TatePublishing.com and all over the World Wide Web. Author of The Window to My Soul, My Walk with Jesus. Thank you for being here tonight, for taking time to be with us. Before I let you go, anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to shout out, say hello to, or a final comment?
Actually, first I would like to say thanks to my parents to give me the right of life. Without the decision to let me born, I would not be here. And I would like to share one final point. This is from the Spanish translation of my other book. Is called El Espejo de Mi Alma. This was published by Wine Press, and this one is called Mis Manos, My Hands, and it's actually a prayer. Mis manos fueron creadas para orar. Mis manos fueron creadas para curar. Mis manos fueron creadas para ayudar a otros. Mis manos fueron creadas por Dios, para Dios, y son usadas por Jesús. I want to thank you once again for the time. It has been lovely. It is almost midnight here in Germany. And I hope that you are having a great time. And just remember that when God leads you to something, He will guide you through it. So just simply trust His timing. And you'll be blessed with more things than you ever dream of.